This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Thursday, 2nd of September, 2021. We have a market in the U.S. Just to recap, where the S&P didn't quite make it to those new highs before settling a bit lower. Nothing threatening so far in terms of the size of that decline. The NASDAQ actually managing to scratch new highs before reversing there. And we can see on slide 2 that the scale of that recent advance has taken actually the 21-day moving average on the NASDAQ 100. That's that green moving average there to actually above the prior major high. It's been quite a run. We would argue that it'd be hard to advance at anything resembling this recent pace. As we noted on the S&P 500, we've actually exceeded the upward sloping trend line. Can be a prelude to a bit of destabilization, to a volatility in markets, but we're certainly not seeing that elsewhere. We're seeing risk appetite coming in pretty good in the FX market, where the dollar has weakened, the yen is weaker as well, especially, and China's coming back online as well with some gains. So in the baskets, we can see some of the speculative categories, next-gen medicine, crypto and blockchain, bubble stocks, et cetera, have had another strong day. And we're looking at that as a, we're very cautious here in this market. As we discussed before in recent podcasts, we think that the length of time we've seen this market advance without major corrections is a concern, but we're also failing to identify what the distinct negative catalyst is there. And certainly the market was happy with that recent Fed Chair Powell performance and speech indicating that the punch bowl is not about to be taken away anytime soon. All right. And then a brief recap here of one interesting data point yesterday, the ISM manufacturing registering a stronger than expected level. Of course, after I suspected that it might be weaker than expected, it was at almost 60 on the August reading there at the headline, expected to have dropped to below 59 from the July level of 59.5. But I just want to pull out an interesting, some of the interesting subcomponents here. So we have new orders, as you can see on slide 3, the blue line there, this cluster of new orders advances at well above 60 and even above 65 on many occasions, just month after month after month. It's something that has never happened before at this level, the rate of improvement there in new orders. But you can see with the employment level dropping back below 50, there's something amiss here. And that thing that is amiss is likely all the supply chain disruptions, et cetera, meaning that they're not even bothering to add workers to the workforce, either because they can't find qualified workers or because they can't get the parts to put the stuff together to send it out the doors. So this is a very interesting development, and it's not real. There's no really precedent for this type of mixed performance for these two subcomponents of that ISM manufacturing. But we need to skip over to commodities. Mr. Hansen, you are here in the studio today. It's been a couple of days since we've had an update from you. We saw an OPEC Plus meeting yesterday, and it looks like they're agreeing to some production increases.
They did indeed, John, and that was basically more or less what the market has been expected. They are still, the Joint Technical Committee came out with a forecast the other day, basically looking for demand to exceed supply for the remainder of the year. So with this in mind, they felt no reason why not to continue with the agreed set with the course that's been set by increasing on a monthly basis by 400,000 barrels. I think also what the increase is signaling as OPEC is right now quite content with prices around $70 on Brent. We've been hovering around that level now for a few months. And it's a price which is not too hot, i.e. it's not going to allow a strong recovery from non-OPEC producers, and it's not too cold either. It's a decent, it creates a decent revenue for producers. The EIA report from the US yesterday was a bit of a mixed bag, obviously not really having too much of an impact because it's the week just leading up to last week or this, the Hurricane Ida, which will disrupt many of these numbers over the coming weeks. But what we did see was production rise to a 15-month high, 11.5 million barrels. So continued recovery on that front, with crude oil stocks at the same time coming down because exports are fairly robust and also refinery demand has been keeping up. Because even though we had the Delta virus also hitting the U.S., the consumer demand for gasoline has not really tapered off. So that's a strong signal that we are that mobility is has not been negatively impacted by the virus in the U.S.
Yeah, certainly not in terms of getting your car and driving around. Very different pattern we're seeing. If there are any limits of activity, it's not that type of limitation we're seeing. And you mentioned Hurricane Ida here coming in, and that disrupts a key artery of commerce that people maybe don't think about. The Mississippi River, and it's the that's where it flows into the ocean, is around New Orleans, and we've seen some actual damage for their ability to get some of this grain and other things that are flowing into this artery out to the market.
Absolutely, yeah. And I'll just put in corn and soybean slides here on slide six, because these are really the two major crops impacted right now. Because as John mentioned, the Midwest farmers, they tend to ship their put a bulk of their production on big barges to be sent south along the river to the Gulf Coast for exports to the global market, especially towards Asia and China. And floodings right now has basically stopped the export abilities out of these terminals. And we're already now seeing signs that some of the Chinese buyers, they have diverted their interest towards Brazil instead of the U.S. This is critical because we are just about to enter the harvest season in the U.S. So inventories will go up quite dramatically now over the next month or so. And if they cannot get the grains shipped out of the country, then the prices may start to come under some pressure. And we're seeing part of that happening already. So really just to inventory is building up in the U.S. due to the aftermath of the Ida.
Yeah, and then in FX, we're seeing, just to change the subject a little bit, because I want to lead into your thoughts on gold here in a moment, we're seeing a pretty decent pro-cyclical feel to things. So we've seen this dollar come in much weaker. And I think yesterday's action is really helping to sort of cement this recent reversal. So you see something like Aussie dollar, you can look at it on slide four, also Aussie yen. This reversal is now taking on a really full V-shaped form, and that type of V-shaped activity, even if we just start to retrace a bit, suggests we put in a pretty emphatic low for the cycle here. I think that also at the margin will support risk sentiment to see a weak dollar as well. So as mentioned, the dollar and the yen weaker. And in, I guess, some of the pro-cyclical commodities would have not necessarily responded. I think part of the Aussie comeback is it was oversold. All this focus on the COVID outbreak there. But if a reminder overnight of some of the fundamentals long-term that have really shifted in favor of the Aussie, and that is the massive trade surplus, a record one overnight. And this is reminding us that Australia is a current account surplus nation. It has been for a couple of years after decades as one of these sort of classic overconsumption, basically trade deficit, current account deficit nations. So I think that comeback in the crosses, in particular in Aussie, is quite interesting. And you can see on the momentum on slide four that we've seen a very nice comeback, 5-day change at the highest of any of the currencies. But if we look over at fixed income, we're not really seeing yields coming in higher, at least not in the U.S. We've seen a pretty decent little pop in European yields, as I discussed in my most recent FX update. I guess the mix here is sort of mixed. I guess the support for precious metals, and you with inflation fears, et cetera, pro-cyclical outlook, I guess gold is just sort of languishing because speculative energy is elsewhere.
Absolutely. We have seen that recently that other areas have received a lot of attention. And I think also the fact that we continue to see stock markets trading near record highs, that's also reducing the need for diversification. But you mentioned the dollar, John, and yesterday I think we saw some hawkish comments as well from two well-known hawks in the ECB talking about earlier tapering. And so the euro dollar is back above 118. That should support gold. But I think the market is really just wants to get this non-farm payroll report out of the way tomorrow. So we are trading sideways, and the key levels really to watch, and which needs to be broken, taken out for potential additional momentum to come in, is that 1835 level in gold, which I highlight here on slide seven, and also 2450 on silver. I mentioned earlier in the week, you should keep an eye on that gold silver ratio at 75. We bounced off that level now four or five times, and we're challenging again today. If we do break below that, that could signal some short-term outperformance of silver. But given where we have yields with real yields below minus 1%, and we've got the dollar weakening, both metals should be trading higher at these levels. So it could potentially just be lack of interest ahead of tomorrow's job report.
Yeah, I'm interested to see if it can break that important level. All right, just a brief look at where we are with earnings and what we're looking for today. Two big companies reporting today, Broadcom in the US, and DocuSign. DocuSign, I put the chart up since its IPO on slide 8. It's been a spectacular performer since that IPO, especially in late 2019 and into the highs post-pandemic outbreak. We have reached new highs before, but I mean, just, you know, emblematic of the kind of valuation some of these company or some of these companies are getting. A PE of a couple of hundred, selling at 35 times sales. So you're talking about a company valued at close to $60 billion, and it has yet to reach $2 billion in revenue, growing, of course, very rapidly, 50%+ per year over the last few quarters. But interesting to see how the market treats earnings reports from companies that have received these kinds of valuation. And Broadcom, of course, is a huge, is really a chip giant. So one of the key companies in the semiconductor space. Just want to bring up one more equity story that I think folks should tune into, because I think it's very interesting as we head into the rest of the year, really, and into next year and whenever, the future in general. And that is these, of course, these mega caps that have been the leaders of the broader market indices from Apple, Facebook, Google, et cetera. And that is that there's a new Department of Justice antitrust move against Google expected here, in which they're going to be looking at the company's behavior and its digital advertising marketplace, the crown jewel of Google, or Alphabet, of course, the parent company there. And somewhat related to that, and this is on top of a recent suit from the state attorneys generals in the U.S. looking at a deal between Alphabet and Facebook, in which there are accusations of manipulation of auctions, etc. But interestingly as well, a couple of stories here. So South Korea has become the first country that I know of, I think it was positioned as the first country to have done this, that is simply demanding that Apple and Google open up their payments, their app stores, to payments from other providers. This is a move that could set a precedent elsewhere. This is key stuff for the revenues of these companies, particularly for Apple on its services side. And then Apple is sort of trying to get ahead of this. It recently cut its portion of online payments for smaller companies to 15% from 30%. But now it's looking at moving to a unilateral move to reduce for media, it's those payments starting next year. So be interesting to see the, you know, the race of regulation versus these companies potentially getting ahead of this, and also how it affects their growth rates and their monopoly style profits. So just stay on top of those stories. I think it's very interesting, and especially given the weight of these massive companies in the big indices. So let's look briefly at the macro calendar for today. A few little bits and pieces of interest. The latest weekly initial jobless claims. We saw a weak ADP payment or payrolls change yesterday for the private payrolls, 350 versus over 600K expected. This is often a poor predictor of the official non-farm payrolls change, but, you know, with the shutdowns, perhaps the pace of hiring, especially for services jobs, could be somewhat weak for the month. We'll have to see in the official report tomorrow. But in the meantime, for the rest of today, we also have a U.S. trade balance number, a Canadian one, a similar trade balance number. The latest weekly natural gas storage change, and I'll actually get a brief comment from you, Ola, just because natural gas is such a massive focus. Is the market really highly tuned to this weekly number here, or what are you looking for?
Well, we're seeing in the U.S. just that we're seeing across the world that gas levels in storage are below the seasonal averages, and that's been putting upward pressure on in Europe, especially where we've got record prices right now, and also in Asia. And that's adding additional increased demand for U.S. exports of LNG, which will and at the same time, the shale oil production has not recovered as strong as we've seen in previous cycles. And shale oil is gas production. Some of that derives from shale oil production as well. So we have a gas issue around the world this coming winter potentially. And that is driving also the risk of increased price in oil, because some of the poorer countries may switch from gas to fuel burn, and that could increase demand for oil as well. So generally, the energy sector remains well bid, especially the gas sector, where especially Europe and Asia is on fire.
All right, an important price input, to say the least, globally. That's a wrap for today. We'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.